So let's do it.
All right. Let's get going. One more edition of the Design Intent. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about, I think a lot of it has to do with our current times, with our current, I guess we're still locked down, right? So it's May 6th, and I've lost track of how many days that I've been working continuously in the same location without having really going anywhere other than the two-day drive I spent to go to Florida and spend time with my in-laws. In Dieter Rams, this is about Dieter Rams, and he made some comments about a year ago, I guess when his movie came out. Did you guys see that movie that he had called Rams?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it kind of highlights his whole sort of like design life. And it's pretty interesting. He's obviously a really, you know, prolific designer and probably one of the more important designers for our industry. And he talked, and one of the things that he said, and I always hear designers say this, and I've always struggled with this, and it's just sort of like, oh, I don't want to be a part of the whole, you know, consumerism, and I feel like I've you know, done wrong by allowing this consumerist or capitalist type of approach to products and product developments. His quote is, Dieter Rams regrets the contributing to culture of overconsumption. And part of me agrees, but the other part I get a little aggravated with, because I hear this a lot and there's no solution. And as designers, it's up to us to, we see problems, we should provide solutions other than just sort of pontificate about how shitty things are and how bad things are. And I think today we look at everybody and we really see what's important to us as humans, right?
Well, and I agree with you, right? It sort of puts you in a position where it puts you in a stage or on a stage where you can't win either way, right? So,
right.
And the stage being participating in the worldwide economy. So I guess the question is, can you be a participant in that economy and in such a way where you're not then promoting consumerism?
Well, I think you can. And I think a part of it is, I'm sure there are some people who are so uptight, they would just say, well, I'm not going to do anything. And I'm sure there are some designers who are very, and they can be, and I respect those that can say, I will not work for anyone other than, you know, these types of clients, and they're very choosy about their clients. And I think that's awesome when designers can do that. And I think some of those designers are actually really important to people like us, because they typically will work for pretty well-known brands, or brands that actually have a conscience with what they're doing and what they're developing. I think for us, it's a part of an educational process to the businesses that we're working for, or for you guys would be clients, and trying to, instead of just saying no, it's being more of an educator, right? And trying to help so that as we move down this process, we can actually do a better job and provide a better platform for the next person that's going to come along and potentially make something. We can't make nothing. You can't just say, I'm not going to do anything, and say, I'm not going to participate in the consumerism. Because what if you're making something, and we talked about this before in our previous discussions, of making something that's going to last, that's going to be serviceable, something that is a little bit more timeless, that is more meaningful to the person who buys it, that gives them a better experience and a better, you know, it gives them a better, I guess, a better life expectancy, or a better experience within their life expectancy. It's like when you have a nice set of pots and pans. I think, Aaron, you mentioned it was like pots and pans or knives or something, right? That you buy a really nice set. They're beautiful and they last for a long time as long as you take care of them. It's more of like that approach versus like, oh, just some shitty thing that's going to break and I'm going to throw it away and buy a new one.
Yeah, in that podcast, I referred to my grandma's pots and pans and how she's had them, and it's like family thing, you know, like everyone wants her pots and pans because she keeps them beautiful and they've been in the family forever.
Right. So they tend to have more familial value just because of who used them and where they used them.
I guess it's on a scale, right? So you could go to one extreme and, you know, I guess the one extreme is, okay, I'm living off the grid, off the land, and I guess you could design things for your own use. Okay, I'm going to make a stool out of this log I found in the woods or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That would be one extreme. Obviously, the other extreme would be, you know, designing cheap plastic tchotchkes that people throw in the ocean.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the right balance, right? Is we are participants in the economy, in some as designers and also as consumers. So, and we are, and as such, we are consuming resources as well as contributing to others' consumption as product designers in some fashion. So I guess that's the balance to find is, okay, we are participants both as a profession and consumers ourselves, but let's find the right balance of that.
Yeah.
And like you, that's where in this Dieter Rohm's story and movie, he expresses some serious regrets about even being a designer, right?
Yeah, that one really hurt because he's probably one of the bigger, more larger influences to design. Right, and you look at all the products that are reminiscent of the whole Braun, that sort of original Braun 60s design minimalism that he was doing.
Sure.
He's why I became a designer. He's exactly why I went into industrial architecture.
I guess that would be, and I don't know if he would be able to answer it, right? Okay, if he wasn't a designer, what would he want to in? You know, if he was to do it over again, that's what he said. I wouldn't be a designer. What would he be? I know he was started out being trained as an architect.
Right. And well, he said he wanted to be a landscaped architect or an urban planner.
Right. Okay.
Which I guess that's kind of cool because I don't know, maybe urban planning always, I don't really know much about it. I mean, I saw the urban planners when I was in architecture school. And
sure. Well, you're just designing
cities,
urban structure and things.
Yeah. But I mean, he's had such a big influence and I don't know if you could say he's contributed to this consumerism other than maybe he hates the fact that his products are sought after. I don't know.
I mean, you could look at it like, okay, he made a living, a good living working for a company that manufactured products in a number of categories, right? And then he worked also consulting, you know, jobs here and there for other firms. So
I think it's easy to sit back at the end of your career. This is me being angry at the statement and those types of statements. It's easy to do that when you have a full belly, right? It's easy to tell people something when you have a full belly and you have, not only have you created a legacy, you've created a dynasty that he'll be remembered for forever, right? He will be in the history books 100 years from now. And not only that, he's created a source of revenue for his children and his grandchildren and his great grandchildren just off of his name of what he's done, right? And so it's easy to sit back after you've created such a dynasty to say these things and to say, oh, it was terrible, I should have never done it.
Sure.
Well, I mean, if anything, his he has the opportunity to influence people to make the right choices as designers and even as consumers. And I know for myself, just with our recent back to our sort of COVID-19 supply chain issues and all of that kind of stuff, where we're kind of held hostage to other countries and their ability to make things for us. From this point on, since this has happened, when I go to buy things, I am always looking to see what is made in America first. And then from there, I kind of work my way out of the hemisphere and try to buy things that are crafted, made by hand, or made by, you know, some factory in a friendly country versus a non-friendly country like China. Or is it, at the minimum, is it an American company? But again, you know, you've got Japanese companies building quote unquote Japanese cars in America for Americans. So it's kind of a tough thing, and you really have to study, but you can find most of what you need made in our country by U.S. citizens. I think that's important.
Well,
versus the flat out, I'm going to buy the cheapest thing I can, consumerist approach.
And something like that, you know, like American products will definitely cost more, but bringing it back to Dieter Rams, that might be why his products in the end still hold values, because they're not cheap. You know, cheaply made, just throwaway products. So in the end, that might even help us with, you know, what we were saying about the consumerist mentality. If our products are, you know, well built, crafted, and they're very nice, it might encourage us to keep them longer. I feel like Dieter Rams products do kind of have that craft and that, I don't know, that feel of higher end product that you wouldn't want to throw it away, even if it's old. And, you know, like even if you have an alarm clock on your phone, you're still inclined to use it. LeBron Dieter Rams alarm clock.
Yeah, I have one. I use it.
So, yeah, I like what you're saying in the sense that I think when products are locally made, there might be a little bit more of a pride, and there might be made more with care, and they might in the end help to have less cheaply made throwaway products.
Well,
in the long term, at least.
I mean, local, I mean, and that works wherever you're located, whether, I don't know, you're in Thailand or Norway or Australia or whatever, right? The benefit of that, regardless of, let's say, quality, is it's less of an impact because you're not shipping it halfway around the world.
Right.
Right. So,
right.
So there's a, you know, at least that part of it.
Well, I've looked at it like, I mean, something as silly as a pair of swim trunks. And if you look online and you start doing searches, all the stuff on Facebook starts coming up. Right. And
Amazon or Facebook.
Yeah. Like on Facebook. Right. Cause once you do a search, it kind of knows, it's kind of creepy that way.
It's tracking here. Okay.
Yeah, and so then all of a sudden these, you know, pretty nice brands start showing up with pretty cool options, right, that you might want to buy. And they're 50 to 80 or 100 bucks, whatever, right? And you're kind of looking in that price range. But then I start digging in deep, like, where are these all made? And they're made, like, you know, Vietnam, made in China.
Yeah.
There's some kind of cool things that are nicely made that are clothing options that are made, like, down in Peru or Venezuela, Mexico. But like I can find at the same price point a really nice pair of shorts made in America in California.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did that same search last year and bought two pairs from a company out in California.
What was the company called?
Name. It has their logo on the center of the top of the back, though. I'd have to look.
Birdwells?
Oh, is that's it who Birdwells? It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys have been around forever. Like, I'm going to buy a pair of their shorts.
Yeah, I bought them, and to be honest with you, they are super fantastic.
They've been around since, I think, the 50s.
Yeah, and yeah, you could tell that, okay, these are built they're rugged, like, they're, I mean, not rugged, but they're built very well, and they'll just last and last and last.
Yeah.
The only problem I have is I bought this like sort of navy darker blue pair is it's almost kind of hard to tell when they're inside out. And actually one time I put them on inside and someone had to tell me.
That's not their fault, Dan. That's funny.
It was dark. It was dark. All right. Anyway, well, yeah, but they were fantastic. And I was stoked that they were made in California, right?
Yeah.
And I probably would have paid more for them.
Yeah.
And they were like, pretty reasonably priced in terms of, like you pointed out, you know, other.
I think it's like $85. And if you want special patches, you might jack it up to about $100.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's expensive, but
you buy
those
one
things
nine.
Will last forever. Yeah. They'll go on forever, right? They're made to last. And I guess, you know, for somebody like Dieter Rams, that would be, I think that's more of an important message to say, is that we should be more careful with our purchases. And I think some of the younger generations in Aaron's age group, I know from some of the research that I've seen, where instead of it being about more things, it's more about the experience. And we've all heard this and seen this, even in random news articles, but I think that's more important. I think some people are starting to get the hang of that. Of course, there's always going to be, there's pigs no matter what. I would ask Dieter is like, do you want us to go back to an agrarian economy? Is that what we're supposed to do? And I peddle apples to your oranges and Aaron trades us for eggs. Is that what we have to do in order to bash the consumerist or this sort of horrible, you know, capitalism is bad kind of thing?
I kind of get the sense that he maybe has a little bit of that type of nostalgia.
Right.
But like you pointed out, he has that nostalgia looking back and not necessarily, look at the resources I have available to me now that I did that, right? He's kind of forgetting that part of it.
Yeah.
So if he was to have a normal, let's say, or not normal, but your sort of average career, would he sort of still have that same nostalgia? I kind of don't think so.
I think maybe. It depends on the person, and maybe we're not even hearing everything. I mean, maybe the context of these news articles and these little snippets are of him saying those things, but he's not really, maybe they're not proposing some of the other.
We're not getting the full story. We're just getting
the full story.
Editor wants us to hear.
Yeah, and I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to him.
Sure.
But I always hear that argument, and I guess that's why I wanted to talk about it. And I felt like, you know, here's a man whose influence has influenced many, many companies that are among the best companies on the planet. I just don't know if that's, you know, I don't know, maybe buying new iPhones is a bad thing. I mean, I don't really know how to solve this problem other than trying to be more conscientious about what we do as designers and what we do as consumers. And I think you kind of mentioned this before, Dan. It's like we can probably have, not only can we have a big effect on what, you know, what we do as a professional, but we can have an even bigger effect on how we behave, right?
How we do things. You have complete control as the consumer.
Right.
You have less control as the, you know, employee of a company. So, and that's for me, I would say in the last few years where I've definitely tried to improve my impact. And as we say, just buy less things, but nicer things that will last.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of makes me excited, you know, towards the future somehow. You know, like if products start becoming more, I mean, I don't know if they were ever this, but more of an actual tool and an actual thing to cherish. coming back to the shorts, Daniel also has a pair of sandals that are hand-built in San Antonio. They're handmade.
And oh, yeah?
He's had those for how many years?
Well, what are they called?
Well, I bought them originally, I think, in 2003. So it's a 2020. So I've had them for 17 years. That's the Piper Sandal Company.
It's just a sandal company.
Yeah, it's small. It's kind of like a one-guy one and probably his family operation. And they come with a lifetime warranty where you can send them back and he will recondition the leather and do all sorts of things to them.
Really?
Of which I've sent them back twice, but it's the same pair of shoes for the last 17
years. I'm definitely going to get some of these.
I've even talked to the guy on the phone, right?
Yeah.
I sent him back the last time. And he says he's going to keep doing it as long as he's around, which I think he's getting up there. He started in the 70s, I think. So that kind of gives you his relative age. But
sweet.
I know. I need to.
Did you get the slip-on?
No, I got the classic ones, but with the wider strap. I've probably worn them when you've seen them.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Piper Sandal Company.
I like it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think stuff like that is like really, I think it's just really nice. I think it's just really
a good way to go. These would look good on your feet out there walking along the beach in your current residence.
Yeah.
So
it would look good. Call. He even has a cell phone out here.
You can call and talk to him. He's very accessible.
This is great.
I think that sort of quality resonates with all of Dieterom's products in a way. Even though they're not handmade and they are mass manufactured, they do have sort of that like nostalgic, very well made, beautiful.
Well, that's the kind funny of thing.
Feel.
Yeah, the funny thing, since we kind of. I don't know if we took some swings at him, but we could praise him as well. As you can look at many of the things that he's designed, decades ago, and once you just look at him, and immediately your eyes like, wow, there's something about it that's just beautifully done that causes you to sit there and just look at it and study it.
Yeah.
Right. It's like some of the radios he did. Okay, you look at some of the speaker openings, and it's like, okay. It's very simple, but it's like there's something about it that's mesmerizing, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely the magic that he captured that's hard to quantify, but it's the beauty and the simplicity and how he did it. And fortunate for him, it's something obviously that was innate and he started early in his career and kept at it. Whereas, for myself, I can sort of look back in early in my career and think, okay, I didn't really know what I was doing. No, not that I know a whole lot now, but I think I know more, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just now coming in the last few years, coming into, okay, it's the simplicity, I get it now.
Right? Yeah. Well, he said, what did he say? His quote was less but better, which I've always liked. I always thought it was a good thing. And, Yeah. I've always been a big fan. I mean, I don't know if you guys, I think I told you guys the story, like when I was in architecture school and I had to buy a coffee maker for my apartment, I was shopping and there was the company Braun, which I didn't really know anything about at the time because this was in 1988. And I'm like, well, I want that one. And it looked better than all the others, but it was like $8 more, which was, it was like $24 versus, I don't know, $15 or $16. Yeah. And I bought it. And then when I finally figured out it took about 2 years when I stumbled across a design article in a magazine that happened to be in the library laying on the table when I walked by, and it had a picture of that product. And so I picked it up and started reading it, and I'm like, well, shit, this guy studied architecture. I had no idea what industrial design was. That was my first introduction into IT.
Oh, wow. That was it, huh?
Yeah. And then I said, well, I want to go and do that. I don't want to be an architect. I want to go and make things like this. This is what I want to go and do.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that is the coffee maker, and he then had a direct impact on you.
Oh, yeah. 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 So if he was all about not being a consumer and his product wasn't there, it wouldn't have had a life-altering effect on me. I would have just been wallowing behind blueprints and
designing elementary schools.
Yeah.
The cafeteria. Your assignment is the cafeteria.
So. Yeah. Drawing toilet partitions.